20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, Packers fans? Happy Saturday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at AndyHermanNFL. Appreciate you guys checking out the show today. Always appreciate the opportunity to talk Packers with you. If you're here for the first time, make sure to like, subscribe, comment, give those five-star reviews. But more importantly, just thanks for being here. We've got a lot to get to today. Our main topic is going to be which Packers have shown the most progress in 2025 and which ones have maybe regressed in 2025. We'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get there, we do have some news and notes. Also want to shout out Blake Anderson and David De Bruyne for signing up to become brand new Pack-A-Day Podcast YouTube members. If you haven't checked out those memberships yet, make sure to do so. We did have a couple of transactions on Friday that I want to go over as well. Devontae Wyatt officially placed on IR, which opened up that roster spot for Jaden Reed, right? Not so fast. In comes defensive tackle Quinton Bohanna. And if you are not familiar with Quinton Bohanna, let me just tell you, this is some serious beef being added to the Packers defensive line. 6'4", okay. 355 pounds of Quinton Bohanna is now a Green Bay Packer. If you're looking for that Howard Green 2.0 opportunity to just echo 2010 again, maybe Quinton Bohanna can be this version of Howard Green. He is a big mammoth human being. He's going to add some real beef to that defensive tackle room. It's interesting because they already added Jordan Riley earlier this week, nose tackle type, right? From the Giants practice squad, now on the active roster. We talked about this with Justice Mosqueda earlier this week. When you sign a player off the practice squad, you're basically required to keep them for 3 weeks. How it works is you have to pay them for 3 weeks and you cannot use that roster spot for anybody other than them for 3 weeks. You can release them, but you don't get that roster spot and you don't get the money back. So there's literally no advantage unless there was some sort of conduct detrimental to the team and it was better just waiving them and releasing them rather than keeping them on the roster because you're paying them anyway and their roster spot's taken up for 3 weeks no matter what. So Jordan Riley is not going anywhere for 3 weeks. And now they added an additional nose tackle to this team. So two nose tackles in 1 week after really spending the entire season with, in a way, Nasir Stackhouse is kind of the only true nose tackle. Now, Colby Wooden has played there, right? But the true nose tackle type, Stackhouse, and he barely played. And now all of a sudden, at this point in the season, Devontae Wyatt goes out. You don't add a three technique. You add two more nose tackles. It's an interesting decision. So why might Green Bay have done that? Well, I've got a couple things to tell you and why I think why. Number one, you cannot find pass rushing defensive tackles on December 5th. It's not possible. They're not out there. Good luck. If they were out there, somebody would have picked them up already. If you have a good pass rushing defensive tackle, guess what? They are employed in the NFL already and on an active 53-man roster. So trying to replace Devontae Wyatt with somebody off the street that could play like Devontae Wyatt, that's an impossibility. You can't do it. So you have to pivot. All right, well, we can't have a Devontae Wyatt, but what we can do is we could play Colby Wooden and Warren Brinson and Carl Brooks as more of our three techniques and move those players over more and play more of that under tackle. Meanwhile, now we have Stackhouse, Bohanna, and Riley who can play more of that traditional nose tackle role. So you take your guys already in hand and say, all right, we're going to use them to replace Devontae Wyatt, maybe LVN eventually as well once he comes back. And now we're going to add some beef to this defensive tackle room that allows you to stop the run a little bit better and adds a little bit more physicality in the center of that defense. It makes sense. Again, if you could find a Devontae Wyatt, then yes, go out and find that player and replace it and boom, you're good to go, but you can't. So what can you find? It's kind of like the Darian Kennard of the offense, right? Can you replace Tucker Kraft? No. If you could, you would love to, but you can't replace a Tucker Kraft. So you're going to receive, you know, utilize some of the receiving tight ends, specifically like a Luke Musgrave and to a lesser extent, Josh Wiley, to try to piece some of the receiving stuff together. But instead of saying, well, let's find a better receiving tight end when you can't, well, let's just put an offensive lineman there. And at least we get a really good blocking version of that player because we can't find the receiver, you know, no matter what. So let's just do that. And it's a similar thing on the defensive line of, we can't find the pass rusher that Devontae Wyatt is. So let's find a really great run stuffer, at least somebody that projects as a run stuffer, and plug them in there instead. And we get something out of it that way. So for that reason, it makes sense. The other thing is, these next 4 weeks, the Bears are the second best rush offense in yards per game. The Broncos are 14th. The Bears are second again. And then the Ravens are fourth. Three of the top, you know, you're basically playing, well, the Bears twice, but second place with the Bears, fourth place with the Ravens, and 14th with the Broncos. Those are some good run offenses, and potentially all of them could be in cold conditions, right? Or who knows what conditions you might get. Green Bay at home, you've got Denver on the road, Chicago on the road, Green Bay at home. There's no friendly confines of a dome anywhere mixed in there. These are four outdoor element weather games where running the football could be paramount. And now you've added a little bit of extra beef to your defensive line. So for a couple of reasons, it does make a lot of sense that they would go in that direction. But it is intriguing that they added two defensive tackles. And noteworthy because this is all the open roster spots that they had at the moment. Now, we'll get to the injury report in just a moment. Marshawn Lloyd and Colin Oliver are both out this week, but Brenton Cox and Jaden Reed are both questionable. And if you want to activate either of those players, you need an open roster spot, and Green Bay doesn't have one. So what does that mean for Jaden Reed and Brenton Cox? They're just not playing this week? Not necessarily. And my guess is Brenton Cox will not. And my guess is they'll wait on him. There's no real reason, unless they just think Brenton Cox is a lot better than Aaron Mosby and they just want to make that move. But Cox doesn't play teams. Mosby does. I don't expect them to go in that direction this week. So would not expect Brenton Cox to get activated on Saturday. And by the way, you can keep an eye on this on Saturday, because if either Brenton Cox or Jaden Reed are going to be active on Sunday, they need to be activated on Saturday. So as you're listening to this, usually happens around, I want to say like 3 p.m. on Saturday Central Time, you'll know whether or not either of those players are activated and what, if any, well, they'd have to, if they activate either of these players, make a corresponding transaction to open that spot up. So who would make sense? Who could Green Bay potentially release if they want to add one or two of those players to the active roster? Malik Heath would be one that I would keep an eye on, and that would be a potential Jaden Reed transaction, right? Well, Reed comes back, Malik Heath is cut. However, it may not be quite that easy. If you are bringing back Jaden Reed but releasing Malik Heath, your wide receiver room is down to Watson, and this depends on Golden, I should say. Golden is also questionable, but if Golden can't go, you would have Watson, Dobbs, Wicks, Reed probably on a snap count, and then just Bo Melton. One other thing they could do in that situation is release Malik Heath, activate Jaden Reed, and call up one of their practice squad wide receivers to give them a little bit more depth there. That could be another direction they go in. Or if Golden's healthy, then it probably doesn't matter, and they could release Malik Heath without having to worry about it quite as much. But they are a little bit shaky at wide receiver with Matthew Golden questionable and with Savion Williams out for this game. So that makes Malik Heath maybe not as likely as maybe he is once everyone in that receiver room is actually fully healthy. Donovan Jennings could be a player that they release. With Jennings, that would bring them down to only 8 active offensive linemen. Now, maybe Green Bay feels really good that they'd get Jennings back on the practice squad or even active roster next week if they wanted to bring him back. They don't need the 9th offensive lineman for game day. You only activate 8 anyway. And the thing that I would say is, if they somehow lose Donovan Jennings, they could bring Brant Banks or technically Lasita Smith or any of their interior offensive linemen that are on the practice squad. Banks is a tackle, I should say. But they could bring one of those guys up from the practice squad. And I don't think the difference between, let's say, Donovan Jennings and Brant Banks is going to be anything worth noting anyway. I think you're probably just having a bad offensive lineman starting for you if it would ever get to that situation. So maybe you could release Donovan Jennings and bring somebody up. If it is going to be Brenton Cox, you could look at Aaron Mosby, but again, Mosby is a premium special teams player for them. Same thing with Christian Welch. You could release him, but Welch is a premium special teams player. So I don't think it's going to be that. It would also leave them a little bit thin at off-ball linebacker. Although with Quay coming back, maybe that is an opportunity. The other one that now has to be talked about a little bit is Nasir Stackhouse. They just added two nose tackles. If they like those two nose tackles more than Nasir, I get that they've kind of redshirted him so far with a few snaps here and there, and it would be kind of a bummer if they lost him. And I bet he would. There's a chance at least that he would garner some waiver interest. But if you're adding two nose tackles, there may not be a ton of room. But the other complication there is that, again, Bohanna's not going to be, I would be stunned if he was ready this week for Chicago. And even Riley may not be ready this week for Chicago. So you probably need Stackhouse in this game. So it gets to this really interesting dynamic. I'll be very intrigued to see. I would guess that the corresponding move would be Christian Welch, Donovan Jennings, or Malik Heath. But it gets very, very interesting depending on who's available, who's not available, and those sorts of things. But if they do want either Jaden Reed or Brenton Cox or both, they will need to make corresponding transactions for both of those players. I guess one other possibility that I hadn't thought of until I'm kind of thinking of it now, and hopefully this isn't the case, putting LVN on IR would be one other way to open up a roster spot. Hopefully they don't feel like they need to do that, but if they feel like he's going to be out for 4 weeks, they could do that. I guess Savion Williams would be another one if they want to be extra sure that he gets that foot right and maybe just shut him down for 4 weeks. That could be another way to get Jaden Reed up as well. There's options, but it's a unique and interesting situation for Green Bay. And I'm going to be interested to see how Goody handles it, assuming that Jaden Reed is good to go for this game, which we would all love to see. Well, let's get to that injury report and what's on the horizon presented by Schreiber Horizon. For Green Bay in this game, there are four players who are out. Marshawn Lloyd and Colin Oliver, who are ramping up, right? They're not actually on the active roster right now, but they're not getting activated. They're officially out this week. Savion Williams and LVN, who we just talked about as well. All four of those players are, you know, not going to play. Devontae Wyatt was technically on that list as well, but now that he's on IR, we don't need to talk about it anymore. We know he's done for the year. Questionable players include Jaden Reed, Matthew Golden, Brenton Cox, Nate Hobbs, and Javon Bullard. We talked about wide receiver. If all of a sudden Golden and Reed cannot go and Savion Williams cannot go, you're very thin. You've got Watson, Dobbs, Wicks, Melton, and you'd definitely call up at least one, maybe two wide receivers to the active roster in that situation. But hopefully either Reed or Golden can go. But those are two big time players to keep an eye on this weekend to see if they can go or not and just give Green Bay a few more weapons on offense. They would have Malik Heath as well, assuming that they would not make a transaction there. So Watson, Dobbs, Wicks, Heath, and Melton would be the five. So probably only need to call up one if Golden and Reed are not able to go. The other situation is the slot corner position. Nate Hobbs and Javon Bullard, both questionable. If both can't go, you're probably looking at some form of maybe even Ketanu Adapo or Zane Anderson in the big safety sort of slot role. You could put Nixon in the slot and put him back at the position he played previously and then put Haddon at outside corner. You could put Evan Williams there, but I don't think that's what you want to do. It would be interesting. It'd be very interesting to see what they would do if both are out. If Bullard's out, but Hobbs can play, I would assume Hobbs is going to play a ton in the slot in that situation. And if Bullard is healthy, I would assume we would still see a ton of Javon Bullard. But it should be noted, Javon Bullard did not practice on Friday, just like he didn't on Thursday. That's usually a very bad sign. Hobbs, meanwhile, did practice all week long, which should be hopefully an indicator that he's good to go. And again, you could see Nate Hobbs be the primary slot corner in this particular game. For Chicago, Ruben Hippolyte, their linebacker, is out. Roma Dunze, their really good second-year wide receiver, is out. And then Tyreek Stevenson, the corner, is also out. Dunze, the big one there. Luther Burden, their rookie wide receiver, is going to have to step up big for them. And of course, DJ Moore as well. But look for a lot of two tight end sets. With Cole Kmet and Colson Loveland, their rookie tight end, who's really good. Look for a lot of two tight end sets, and we know Chicago's. We'll be right back. Today's show is brought to you by PrizePicks. It's the holiday season, the best time of the year for sports, bowl games, marquee basketball matchups, playoff pushes. It's all happening at the same time. And while you and I are out making decisions every single day, like what gifts to buy, what to get for dinner, or which games to watch, there's only one place where it feels good to be right: Prize Picks. I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. The football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of games has been a super fun part of each football week. Oh, and guess what? Prize Picks has a brand new feature: early payouts. If your lineup gets off to a hot start, you may now have the option to cash out winnings before the game even finishes. So join the millions of users and sign up for America's number one fantasy sports app. This week, I'm going with Josh Jacobs against Chicago as Green Bay regains that top seed in the North. I'm also going to be keeping my eye on Puka Nacua, Josh Allen, and Jonathan Taylor. Now it's time for you to get in on the action too, so download the Prize Picks app today using code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. So we all know a chef, a griller, a cooking hobbyist, or a stay-at-home parent who just enjoys making really good food for their family. I have a couple in my family and have seen them light up when they get that perfect ingredient, a piece of cookware, or a new grilling accessory as a present. I know because I love cooking and recently received some Omaha steaks, and I was beyond overjoyed. This holiday season, you can give the gift of USDA certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, cozy and convenient comfort meals, and so much more with Omaha Steaks. When I got my Omaha Steaks, I fired up the grill immediately, and I couldn't wait to taste the grass-fed, grain-finished steaks that showed incredible marbling. It was the perfect gift, and the flavor ended up being unbelievable. Now, Omaha Steaks delivers an exclusive lineup of USDA-certified tender steaks, and their fan-favorite filet mignons have achieved the distinction of USDA-certified very tender. And of course, they also carry mouth-watering burgers, chicken, pork, seafood, and delectable desserts. So right now, save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code PACKADAY at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com using code PACKADAY. Going to want to come out running the football. All right, let's get to our main topic. Which players are playing better in 2025? Which ones are playing worse? And which ones are staying pretty much equal? Let's go with our list of players who have taken arguably some sign or some step back in some way, shape, or form. We're going to go kind of from the least impactful to ones that have maybe taken a little bit more of a significant decline. First off is Carl Brooks. Nothing major here, but Brooks had a plus 0.75 grade last year in my grading scale, a negative 0.8 so far this year. So what we're talking about is a slight positive contribution for Brooks last year to a slight negative contribution from Brooks this year. Add in some injuries, and that doesn't help either. PFF had a 61.8 grade on him last year, a 56.7 grade on him this year. It's not anything all that different, but year three, Carl Brooks, there were a lot of flashes in his rookie year. I thought he plateaued a little bit in year two. I thought there was a lot of hope and really some expectation and playing time for him in year three to potentially take that step and play at a different level. We haven't really seen that. The end of this season is going to be huge for Brooks as he tries to take over for Devontae Wyatt. That's a lot of responsibility. We'll see if Brooks is up to the task, but he's going to need to step up a little bit more than he has so far in his third year in the league. This one's going to be the most controversial, and we'll talk about it first, and then I'll explain my thinking here. Carrington Valentine. I had him at a plus 0.55 a year ago, so I liked, in general, a slight positive what he did. I have him at a negative 0.8 so far this year. This is pretty much neutral to neutral. It's a slight step back in my grading, but it's pretty much exactly what you would get either way. Part of this is because he just came off a really bad week. If it wasn't, we would probably have him in the neutral category. PFF, meanwhile, had a 65.5 grade on him last year, very similar to how I graded him. 60 is their average, their neutral. They have a 67 on him this year. So they have a little bit of an increase for Carrington Valentine. While my grades say a little bit negative, and while PFF say a little bit positive, I would actually lean a little bit more towards PFF. Mine is taking a little bit more into consideration. Not that PFF isn't, but I probably have graded him lower due to some of the tackling stuff. I think his coverage has been really good. I love the way that Carrington Valentine is playing. I do think he's playing more and taking a step with that. So it's in a decline for my grades overall. You could make an argument for neutral. You could make an argument for an improvement. either way, it's pretty damn similar. And if I would actually have to argue, I'm actually arguing against my grades here. I think he's actually taken a little bit of a step, but still needs to clean up some of that tackling as we saw this past week against Detroit. Next up is Rashid Walker. This is pretty damn close to even. I had a negative 1.6 grade on him last year. I have a negative 2.25 grade so far this year. He could easily get better than last year's grade still. He could easily drop a whole lot worse. PFF had him at a 68.7 last year, a 66.6 this year. So again, we're talking very, very similar grades. They noteworthy have him as a slight positive. I am as a kind of a slight negative. But I think the big thing here for Rashid Walker, I was at least hopeful going into this year that Walker in a contract year would play his best football. I don't think we've seen that. And again, if anything, I think he's taken a step back, which is disappointing. But a lot of season left. This is a huge, you know, kind of closing statement from Rashid Walker as he gets ready for free agency of saying, hey, I'm a really good left tackle. Maybe he saved his best for last and can play some really good football down the stretch here. Next up is Luke Musgrave. I actually had a slight positive on Musgrave last year. No, he didn't play a ton with a plus 0.65, but a pretty decent negative on him so far this year with a negative 1.5. PFF actually has him improving. They had a really bad grade on him last year with a 47.1 and a little bit better this year in a 53.7. Either way, year three, Luke Musgrave, a ton of opportunity now with Tucker Kraft out. I just haven't seen him take that step. It's been disappointing. He hasn't made a real impact. He did make that nice catch last week against Detroit, but outside of that, up and down as a blocker, not adding much as a receiver. Lots that we were hoping for based on the talent, the potential, the second round pick, just hasn't quite lived up to it. And again, I actually think he's taken a little bit of a step back this year as well. Aaron Banks. Remember, I did go back and grade all of Aaron Banks and Nate Hobbs and Micah Parsons from 2024. So I do have their grades, even though it was on a different team. Aaron Banks, I had a plus 2.25 grade on him in San Francisco a year ago. He's at a negative 0.1 so far this year, but he is trending in the right direction. In fact, I would tell you, if he continues to play the remainder of the season the way that he has the last month or so, he's going to be pretty dang close to the plus 2.25. But he has to go out and do that. Last year, he was in the positive. This year, through multiple games, he's in the negative. So that's still a difference. PFF agrees that a 65.4 grade on him, which is very similar to the grade I had, and a 58.3, which is very similar to the grade I have on him so far this year. So we both think that there's been a little bit of a step back with Banks from where he was last year in San Fran to where he is right now in Green Bay, but trending in the right direction. Sean Ryan. I actually really liked Sean Ryan's tape a year ago, but it was very volatile. Some really good games, some really bad games. And even within a game, you would get quarters or plays that would look awesome and quarters or plays that would look terrible. But it came out in the wash really well in a positive grade overall with a plus 2.75. Negative 0.5 so far this year for Sean Ryan. Not brutal, not terrible, but definitely a step back. PFF is similar. They had a 61.3 last year, a 57.2 this year. So again, a bit of a step back. Again, contract year for Sean Ryan. Was hoping for the best, was expecting more. We haven't seen it, but he did have his best game of the season last week against Detroit. So hopefully that is a sign of things to come for Sean Ryan. Zach Tom, small step back here. Well, it depends on how you want to look at it. I had a really good grade on him last year, plus 5.25. Only a plus 1.2 so far this year. I do think the injuries earlier in the year really affected him, which is why we saw, I thought, more neutral level Zach Tom earlier in the year rather than the usual positive Zach Tom we see over and over and over again. If he finishes strong and he has been playing better as of late, I do think you could see him get at least closer to that plus 5.25 mark, but the onus is on him to show that. PFF has a small downgrade as well, but has him graded a little bit better. 85.8 last year, 82.5 this year. Either way, I would say a small decrease for Zach Tom overall, in large part due to the injuries earlier in the season. Xavier McKinney, plus 6.60 a year ago, plus 2.10 so far this year. PFF very much in lockstep here. 84.7 a year ago, 75.2 so far this year. The big noteworthy thing here is Xavier McKinney is still playing really good football, both per my grades and per PFF's grades. But it hasn't been nearly as impactful as it was a year ago, in large part due to teams just staying away from him, not putting the ball in his direction. That's noteworthy. That adds value in and of itself. But when you don't get the opportunity to make the plays like you did a year ago, it's tough to have as good of a grade because you're not making as many plays. He's still playing really good football. But and honestly, we're, you know, two or three really good games from Xavier McKinney away from him being really, really close to that 6.6 as well. We'll see if he can do it. But he's either way, again, playing really good football. Nate Hobbs. Last year, I had him graded, again, when I went back and graded his time with the Raiders last year, plus 1.5 in very minimal playing time this year. I have a negative 1.85, which is really bad on a per play basis. PFF was a little bit more kind this year. They had a 61.4 last year, a 56.8 this year. To me, that's a very generous grade for Nate Hobbs based on his play so far this year. But either way, I have a pretty significant decline. Even PFF has him down about 5 points from where he was a season ago. Romeo Doubs. PFF's not as harsh here. They had a 65.7 grade last year, a 62 so far this year. It's another one. Contract year, was hoping for the best. I actually think Doubs is low-key been in a little bit of a slump in the last 3 to 4 weeks. Has not quite been himself. I had a plus 3.55 grade on him last year. Negative 0.5 so far this year. The fumble last week didn't help. He's had some drops. He's had some issues with separating from coverage. And he has not been a great blocker, which is something that has been a little bit of an issue for him as well. But I actually have a negative grade so far in Romeo. Now, PFF, more kind. They have a pretty solid, you know, grade on him, 67.1, but still 2.6 points down from where it was a season ago. Maybe, in my opinion, one of the biggest declines, and it doesn't really matter anymore because he's out for the year anyway, was Elgton Jenkins. I had a plus 3.3 grade on him a year ago, negative 1.4 this year. Obviously, the move to center did not work how I don't think anybody wanted it to. PFF had a 65.7 on him last year, a 62 this year. I think the 62 is rather generous, but either way, the transition to center did not go according to plan. He never quite really looked the part. He didn't seem to be playing his best brand of football, to say the least. It was a disappointing effort from Elgton Jenkins, and then, of course, has the big injury, out for the year, and probably has played his last snap as a member of the Green Bay Packers. Josh Jacobs, last but not least on the regression list. This is in large part, to me, due to the play of the offensive line. But 2024, he had a plus 12.85 grade. 2025, plus 5.3. It should be noted, he is tied with Tucker Kraft for my second highest graded player on offense. So we're not talking again about bad Josh Jacobs here, but the 2024 version was pretty arguably, you know, better. Like, there's not really much of a debate there. PFF totally agrees. They had a 92.3 grade on him last year, 82.1 this year. 82.1 is an awesome grade. Plus 5.30 is an awesome grade. He's playing really good football, but not quite to the level he was in 2024. And you can say, yes, that's in large part due to the offensive line, but the offensive line doesn't really go into the grading. Meaning, if like the offensive line can't block and Jacobs gets tackled behind the line of scrimmage, that's not a negative grade on Jacobs. The offensive line screwed that up, right? But it does feel like there's less opportunity for him to make spectacular things happen because the offensive line's been so bad. So to me, this is more a victim of circumstance for Josh Jacobs than him playing significantly worse. I do think the burst has been just a little bit less than where it was at a year ago, but he's still playing great football. And it's kind of like the same thing with Xavier McKinney. Not worried about him, but was probably playing a little bit better last year. Let's go through our steady players next. Keyshawn Nixon. Now, there's a lot of frustration with Keyshawn Nixon. I think it's overblown. My grade on him last year, an exact net neutral, 0.00. So far this year, 0.25. Just steady as it goes. Does he give up some plays? Yes. Does he make some plays? Yes. It's kind of the, for those of you who are aware, like the Jerry Seinfeld episode, Even Stevens, just sort of evens out for him. Some good, some bad, ends up in the wash and pretty much breaks even. That's where Nixon's been. PFF, very similar. 64.1 last year, 65.8 this year. Pretty even and steady overall for Keyshawn Nixon. Devontae Wyatt. I think PFF is very harsh on Wyatt this year. They had a 66.4 in him last year, a 52.9 this year. That's absurd to me. Wyatt's played good football for Green Bay this year. Of course, he's done for the year now, but I don't understand that grade for Wyatt at all. But in 2024, I had Devontae Wyatt with a 1.5 grade. In 2025, I have Devontae Wyatt with a 1.5 grade. Literally exactly even last year's grade and this year's grade. Missed some time last year. Now he's going to miss some time this year. It's almost the exact same player, in my opinion, where he was a year ago. I did think he showed signs of progress, but I thought after he came back from injury, there were 2 weeks that were really rough, which bumped it down. I thought earlier in the season, he was trending to have easily his best season yet. Rashawn Gary, plus 2.10 grade last year, plus 1.8 so far this year. Small decrease so far, but room for Gary easily to blow past the plus 2.1 with multiple games still remaining. So you could actually argue maybe some slight improvement from Rashawn Gary, but he's in a much more envious position this year than he was last year, and he hasn't really made the most of it. PFF tends to agree. They actually put him a little bit more in the negative category. Had a 73.0 grade last year, only a 68.2 so far this year. I think we all wanted a little bit more from Gary. This is the nuance that we've talked about on numerous occasions. He's playing good football. He really is, just not to the level that Green Bay really needs him to, based on expectations, his draft pick status, his contract, etc. You're just hoping for a little bit more, especially on the opposite end of Micah Parsons. Edrian Cooper is the last one. PFF a little bit more harsh here. They had an 85.6 grade on him last year, a 74.8 this year, so they have him taking a pretty significant step back. I've got him pretty equal so far, plus 4.75 last year, plus 3.95 this year. Yes, that's a decrease, but he's trending to get past where he was a year ago for me. I think the big plays last year were more splashy, but I think he's playing better, more well-rounded football in 2025. Jeff Hafley said something similar a few weeks ago. I think he's playing well, but I think in the end, last year was more volatile, big plays and some really bad plays. This year, just good, steady, sound, solid football over and over and over again. I appreciate the brand of football that he's playing. And to me, he's still playing really well. Just asked to do things a little bit different this year because of Micah and because they need him on that second level to make plays. We'll be right back. What's going on, everyone? I am so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Prealcohol. ZBiotics Prealcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Now, pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. So just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Listen, I get it. I was on the fence about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for bachelor parties, fall cookouts, and at a huge tailgating event, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Football is here, which means more opportunities to get out there with your friends and celebrate the season. So before that backyard barbecue brew, post-touchdown mixer, or cocktail by the campfire, don't forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that football season has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/Packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code Packaday at checkout. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money-back guarantee. So if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/Packaday and use the code Packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our partners and use that code Packaday. All right, let's get to the fun ones. Players that have stepped up and improved in 2025. We're going to go from maybe the least to the most. It's not in a perfect order, but Colby Wooden. If you look at Colby Wooden and the grades, it's not going to look like anything significant. Negative 0.8 last year was my grade on him. Negative 0.25 so far this year. But what you really have to understand is he has played a ton more snaps this year. So he has garnered a ton more responsibility in this defense. And he's still slightly, at least, improved his grade so far. And to me, that's a really good sign for Colby Wooden. And I think he's put in a lot of really tough and good work. And I think he's shown a ton of improvement just to be able to be in the role that he's in right now. PFF is in that camp as well. In fact, they have him much more aggressively graded in a better way. 50.0 a year ago, 60.5 so far this year. So no matter what way you slice it, a good step for Colby Wooden from 2024, where really was an afterthought to really being the number one defensive tackle on the team right now. Christian Watson, in a lot of playing time last year up until the injury, plus 3.4 grade. In just a few games back, coming off an ACL and MCL, plus 2.4 already. If he finishes strong, he will easily surpass that number in fewer snaps. And if he would have been healthy all year playing this way, which I know is always the big caveat with Christian, but we're looking at a monster grade for him. PFF agrees, 70.0 grade last year, 84.6 so far this year. A big step for Christian. He looks like the best version of himself. He came back at exactly the right time with Tucker Kraft going down. He's been huge. He's been huge, and he continues to play, I think, his best football of his career. Isaiah McDuffie. I liked McDuffie last year, I think, more than maybe anybody. I had a plus 1.0 grade on him. And this year, I like him even more, plus 2.35. I thought the move that Goody made a ton of sense. It looks even better now. But check out this improvement from PFF. PFF last year had a 55.3 grade on him. They have an 80.0 so far this year. McDuffie's played great ball. Really impressed with what he's been able to do filling in for Quay Walker, and has really solidified himself as the third linebacker on the team. And is it, you know, I don't think he's actually pushing Quay Walker, but he's playing great, and he certainly deserves to be out on the field right now. Javon Bullard. I, again, was probably higher on just about anybody for what Javon Bullard put on tape last year. I know there were some struggles. I really do. But I had a plus 0.55, and I thought people were way going overboard in the Javon Bullard was a bust and he couldn't play and what a wasted draft pick. This season is exactly what I saw coming. I have a plus 2.15 grade on him so far this year. He continues to get better. Hopefully he can play this week. But PFF didn't like him as much last year. 54.2, a 67.9 grade on him so far this year. So a pretty significant increase on their end as well. Next up, Kingsley Enagbare, who was coming back from that injury last year. Negative 1.85 grade last year. Plus 0.75 grade on him this year. So a good jump there. PFF in the same boat. 56.8 last year. 64.3 so far this year. Quay Walker, negative 2.2 grade for Quay. And remember, famously, I was ready to give up on Quay midway through the season. I'm just like, I think I'm done with the Quay Walker experience. And then he went on to play really well the rest of the year, and he's carried that over into 2025. Again, negative 2.2 grade on Quay last year, plus 0.9, not world beating, but good solid grade for Quay. And you might say, Andy, you just said you've got McDuffie at a plus 2.35. You've got Quay at a plus 0.9. Shouldn't you play McDuffie? I understand it. I get it. I'm still not the biggest Quay guy in the world, but I think he's made a lot of, I think he's really advanced. I think he's playing a lot better. I think he's playing the best football of his career. And that athleticism does matter. It really, really does. So to me, it's Quay, but McDuffie's played great, but Quay is playing really good football too. And I think you could probably not go wrong with either. But I'm interested to see what Quay looks like. I do think the offseason discussion is more interesting than it ever was, because it does look like Hopper's ready to play as well. So it's interesting. It's very interesting. But negative 2.2 last year for Quay, plus 0.9 so far this year. PFF disagrees a little bit. They had a 57.2 last year, only a 55.3 this year. So they actually think Quay got worse. I know we talked to Mike Wall about it. Mike thinks Quay's got a lot better. This is why this stuff is very much in the eye of the beholder sometimes. But to me personally, I think Quay's taken a pretty significant step when in there so far this year. Tucker Kraft, I know it's sad to talk about, but it's interesting because he had I was so high on Tucker Kraft, as you guys know, last year, plus 5.55 grade. He had a plus 5.3 so far this year. But if he would have stayed healthy, I think he would have ended up around 10, maybe more, 12. He was trending in an unbelievable direction as really an all-pro caliber tight end. Just the worst, suckiest, stupidest injury ever. And, you know, he was great, and he was going to continue to improve, in my opinion. PFF had a dumb grade on him last year. They had a 67.8. That was stupid. He was playing so much better than that. Even this year, they have a 78.1 on him, which I think is dumb. He's playing so much better than that. But still, they have about almost an 11-point increase on Tucker Kraft from last year to this year. Last three aren't going to surprise anybody. Evan Williams, I loved Evan last year, plus 1.8. I love him even more this year, plus 4.65 with a lot of time left. PFF, they have a more neutral. 72.3 last year, 72.7 this year. I don't care. Evan's been better. He's been phenomenal. I'm glad he's getting his flowers. He should have last year. He was playing really good last year as well, but he's taken a significant step. I love watching him play. One of the more fun young players on this entire team. The penultimate one, Micah Parsons. It's not huge. He had a 90.0 grade from PFF last year, 91.9 this year. I did go back and grade him, remember, though, plus 8.55 grade. I gave him in Dallas last year. He's already at plus 11 so far this year for Green Bay. Again, as good as we could have hoped Micah to be, he's been that and way more. He's been unbelievable, and really excited to see how he finishes out this season. And if he does, like, he could get to like plus 18. He really could. That's the way he's playing right now. Wouldn't stun me one way or the other. That's a pretty significant step, even though he was playing great last year in Dallas as well. And then last but not least, the one, the only, Jordan Love. A lot of this is due to injury last year. Let's state the obvious. But in 2024, plus 7.00 grade. He was good. Not great. He was good. In 2025 so far, plus 15.35. Now we're cooking. Now we are cooking with plenty of time left. This could end up plus 20, plus 25. If he continues to play well, and depending on how far they go in the playoffs, love the way that Jordan's playing. Significant step in the right direction. Proof of concept for everything that you wanted to believe in for him being your franchise quarterback, that he could lead you to, you know, whether or not he can lead them to a Super Bowl obviously remains to be seen, but he's playing at that level. He's playing at that level. PFF agrees, 75.8 grade last year, 87.3 this year, almost 11.5 point improvement. That's it. That's the list. 12 players that have regressed in some way, shape, or form. Carl Brooks. Let's take Carrington Valentine off that. We're going to put Carrington Valentine in his own little unique group. I think he's been better at some things. I still think the tackling has been a little bit worse. I would put him closer to improved, even though, again, my grade's been a little bit lower. We're going to put Carrington in his own little unique island, Carrington Island. So 11 regressed. Carl Brooks, Rashid Walker, Luke Musgrave, Aaron Banks, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom, Xavier McKinney, Nate Hobbs, Romeo Doubs, Elton Jenkins, and Josh Jacobs. The big thing to note there, Rashid Walker, Aaron Banks, Sean Ryan, Zach Tom, Elton Jenkins. Five offensive linemen regressed. That's really one of the big reasons why this team isn't better than what we thought or what, even where they are right now. Five regressions along the offensive line, and now, of course, Elton out for the year. That to me has been the big story of why the offense hasn't even been more potent, why this team hasn't even been better. Four players that have been pretty steady: Keyshawn Nixon, Devontae Wyatt, Rashawn Gary, and Edgerrin Cooper. And then 10 who've shown some form of improvement: Colby Wooden, Christian Watson, Isaiah McDuffie, Javon Bullard, Kingsley Enagbare, Quay Walker, Tucker Kraft, Evan Williams, Micah Parsons, and of course, Jordan Love. That's all I got for you guys today. Thank you so much for joining me. Always, always, always appreciate it. We'll be back here later today. Mike Wall will be back, I should say, with his full film breakdown of the Chicago Bears. Make sure to check those out. If you want to be a smarter, better fan, check out the episodes with Mike Wall where he does the film breakdowns. You're going to get a lot of information from those. Pre-game show from me on Sunday, live pre-game show from me, I think early on Sunday, and then live post-game show probably about an hour and a half after the game is over once I finish up the press conferences and get back home, go live as soon as I can. I'll see you guys then. Shout out to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members: PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Alex Hwang, Peter Ataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gasford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkelstinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weish, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, Les Nienau, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, and Nemo. See you guys soon, but until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.